Now on Documentary on News Talk, Susan Cowell travels to Johannesburg in South Africa and Freetown in Sierra Leone to see how cities in Africa are scaling up for the Urban Resilience Challenge in The Right to a City.
My name is Jamina Tuture. My age, I'm now 45 years old. I have 4 children. Well, me hope, now for let them upgrade we. If we get any challenges, I will see the money, we let them upgrade with community. That's why now we hope, give them the problem. But if they upgrade we, so it go better for we. You see?
So if the slum gets upgraded, you think things will be a lot easier?
Yes. If they upgrade with community, it go easy for we. Because me, I don't live here under 18 years of age. So if they upgrade with community, it will be better. Because we life will look better and they will be able to do with small business. Both the common and sea, would they buy coal, would they buy permine, banana, everything. So the life simple for we. Fish, no problem. So now I make with the beg for let them upgrade with your side.
And that was Jaminatu, a 45-year-old mother of 4 children living in the sprawling slum of Oloshoro community at Murraytown in Freetown in Sierra Leone. Hello, how are you? And you're very welcome to The Right to a City, Building Urban Resilience in Africa. I'm Susan Cahill, and for the next hour, we'll be travelling from Dublin to Johannesburg to Freetown in Sierra Leone to see how Africa is scaling up for urban resilience. Cities are engines of sustainable development, and their design and organisation are fundamental to human health and well-being. Today, half the world's population live in cities, and it is estimated that 3 in 4 people will live in cities by 2050. What's more, 1 in 7 of the world's population, just over 828 million people, live in informal settlements, with limited access to clean water, electricity and waste collection services. So what is the impact of rapid urbanisation on Africa? How is rapid population growth impacting on urban infrastructure and services in the region? And what is a resilient and sustainable city?
Hi, I'm Caroline Reyes. I'm an urbanist and I currently work for 100 Resilient Cities. 100 Resilient Cities is an organization that was created in 2013 by the Rockefeller Foundation to help make cities become more resilient to the growing challenges of the 21st century, so social, economic, and environmental challenges. Urban resilience has multiple definitions. At 100 Resilient Cities, we define urban resilience as the capacity of communities, individuals, businesses, institutions, and systems within the city to survive, adapt, but also grow and thrive in the face of acute shocks and stresses. So when we talk about resilience, we're looking at strengthening cities against disasters, acute shocks such as flooding, earthquakes, but we're also focusing on some of the slower burning challenges, what we call stresses, that are unemployment or poverty or lack of affordable housing, for instance, that actually are interconnected with shocks and stresses. So when we look at building resilience, we're trying to look at the interconnectedness of these shocks and stresses. And for a city to be resilient, we believe that it has to look at its challenges in an interconnected way and come up with solutions that are holistic to address them. Because if cities try to address individual challenges using individual solutions at the pace of urbanization that we are seeing currently and at the scale of the challenges that cities are facing, they will eventually become bankrupt. So what we promote is this holistic approach to strengthening cities, looking at solutions that provide multiple co-benefits.
So what does a resilient city look like? Can you give me some examples? I know you mentioned Addis in Ethiopia there and Lagos in Nigeria, but what does that mean? Is it about transport? Is it about, basic infrastructure? Like, what? How does it feel?
So a city is a system of systems. It comprises a transport system, water system, housing system, multiple systems, and what we're trying to do through our resilience strategies is to look at these systems in a holistic way, look at their interconnectedness. So a resilient city is not, it's hard to say that there is a status of a resilient city. What is important is that cities are constantly evolving and constantly working towards strengthening their resilience. There are qualities that we've identified that we believe that if cities have these features, they will be more able to survive and adapt no matter what type of circumstances that they face. So these qualities could be, for instance, being reflective, a city that can learn from its past and inform future decision based on these learnings. Or a city that is flexible, that means that in the case of a changing circumstance, the city is able to deploy alternative solutions rapidly to meet this growing demand. Or a city that is inclusive, one that plans with all its stakeholders in mind, and that involves and creates a great sense of ownership by partnering with different agencies within a city administration, the national government, but also private sector, civil society, and everyday residents as well.
Good morning. My name is Philip Harrison. I'm a research professor at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, South Africa. We call it WITS University. I'm a professor in city planning, spatial analysis and city planning. My career has moved between working in government as a city planner in all levels of government in South Africa and working as a researcher and an educator in the university. Yes, so that's a challenging question. Because in one sense, yes, Johannesburg is a sustainable city. It began as a city built on mines, and many cities that were built on mining have since collapsed, have become ghost cities in a way. But Johannesburg has superseded its origins. Its economy is now diverse. We no longer depend on mining. We are a post-industrial city with a vibrant economy that's drawing in population from across the African continent and beyond. And in that sense, it's a successful city. As you say, a really vibrant city with a fairly strong economy, not nearly strong enough for the population we have, but a reasonably strong economy. In another sense, we have some serious sustainability problems. For example, we are a city that is nowhere near a large river. We're nowhere near a coastline. And so water is a critical challenge for our city, and our success will depend to a large extent on whether we can continue to access sufficient water to see the continued growth of the city. We are a city that actually is responsible for carbon emissions that are beyond our status as a middle-income economy, because 90% of our electricity comes from coal. So we have a major sustainability challenge in that respect. We are a highly unequal city. We have the highest Gini coefficient for any large city of the world, nearly 0.67. We are an extremely unequal city built on an apartheid past. And so the divisions in our city and the social inequalities threaten long-term sustainability. So we have many sustainability challenges. And I guess the extent to which society is able to mobilize to overcome these challenges will depend on whether or not we can secure sustainability into the future.
Without doubt, we live in an increasing urban world, with urbanization transforming cities, economies, and communities. But urbanization can be a messy process, and it affects different regions differently. This is Caroline Rees, Senior Programme Manager with 100 Resilient Cities in London.
So Africa is at a crossroad right now. The continent is relatively rural compared to many other regions in the world, but it's one of the fastest urbanizing regions globally. Africa is urbanizing today at a 3.65% rate annually. And we estimate that 1 billion Africans will live in cities in 2065. So these are really huge figures. This is an unprecedented level of urbanization, both in terms of scale and pace. And essentially, Africa is urbanizing in a context where, first of all, it is facing huge fiscal constraints. We're urbanizing at a level where we don't have the same amount of wealth and GDP compared to other regions, which means that we have to do more with less. So this rapid urbanization is leading to a huge pressure on cities to deliver basic infrastructure and services such as transportation, housing, water, health, and education with less resources. Africa is also going to be urbanizing in a period of huge climate stress, which is not something that other cities, other regions in the world have faced. So this is also adding a lot of pressure. So as daunting as these challenges are, Africa is also a place where there's a lot of innovation through our resilience strategies. In the 10 cities that we work in Africa right now, we are really looking at how Africa can meet these resilience challenges by harnessing, for instance, the innovation and the strength of the informal sector.
So what is the impact of cities on the environment, and how is climate change impacting on cities in Africa? This is Professor Philip Harrison at Wits University in Johannesburg.
Well, let me start with our contribution to climate change. Okay. As a middle-income country, we shouldn't be a very high emitter. But in fact, we are reasonably high emitter, and that's simply because of our dependence on coal-fired energy production and on the private motor car. So we emit more than we should in terms of our income profile, so we are a contributor to climate change. In terms of impact, well, obviously we're not sitting along the coastline. Okay. We're not Lagos. Lagos is seriously threatened, or a city like Alexandria or Accra in Africa. Mm-hmm. They're seriously threatened by sea level rise. And we're nowhere near the sea, so we don't have that challenge. But what we do have is the challenge of extremely variable weather patterns. So we're susceptible to drought. The whole of South Africa is, in fact, a water-scarce country. But we are susceptible to drought, and we're susceptible to heavy storms because our rain comes in quite fierce summer storms, and they are, some would say, becoming more and more treacherous. So there is a problem of local flooding. We don't have a major river, but we do have a flooding problem, particularly because a number of informal settlements sit right alongside the river course. And so flooding is a challenge that's becoming more of a challenge. But perhaps the more serious problem is food security. Because within the subcontinent of Africa, climate change is causing shift in crop production. And in southern Africa, it's causing a decline in crop production. And so we have to, I think quite seriously about the integrity of our food production chains for the future of Johannesburg. But so it's a bit mixed. We're not the most vulnerable city in Africa or in the world in terms of the impacts of climate change, but there certainly are threats.
On the morning of August 14, 2017, the people of Freetown woke up to a powerful rainstorm, which triggered a massive mudslide and flooding in and around the city. The mudslide claimed the lives of over 1,000 people, with hundreds injured, and over 3,000 people were left homeless. Today, the city of Freetown faces serious water and sanitation issues as it rebuilds its fractured drainage and sewage systems. And zoning plans for land, either residential or commercial, have become a hot topic. So how is the city of Freetown meeting the urban resilience challenge and issues of poverty and marginalisation?
Good morning. My name is Yvonne Ekisor. I'm the mayor of Freetown. I came into office almost a year ago with a simple commitment to transform Freetown. Urban resilience is a really broad word. And it really captures a range of things, environmental issues, environmental management. The city's population is growing at 4.2% per annum. A lot of that is rural drift, which means it's grown-ups coming into the city. This is not little children being born. People looking for housing, people looking for jobs. A direct consequence of the fact that we have very, very limited housing is that we are experienced and have experienced significant environmental degradation. The mountains have been robbed of the green trees, and actually in many places now look like bare brown slopes along the coastal front. Sadly, our very beautiful mangrove shoreline is now littered with slum after slum. 35% of the residents of the city live in what would be described as slum communities. That has implications for sanitation. It has implications for health. It also has implications for natural disasters. And the landslide that we had in 2017 was just one very dramatic incident, but it followed 5 years of flooding every year.
How big a problem is urban drainage? I was walking around the city yesterday and I was going into a few different informal settlements in around Cockle Bay, Crewe Bay, and it seems really challenging.
Yeah, like I said, when you've got communities, informal communities springing up, they don't come with drainage or infrastructure. But you've got human activity, you've got concrete being put in, zinc, etc. So you end up with inadequate drainage. Our topography makes this worse. It's exasperated because we've got the hills, the plain, and then the shore. So when you've got communities that you can't get to by road, you literally have to walk into those communities, and there are no drains, and the trees have been cut down. When it rains, everything washes down.
And that becomes very evident in the drainage systems when you see all the litter.
Yeah, we also have a major challenge with plastic. One of my targets, I've got two sanitation targets. One is to increase to at least 60% the solid and liquid waste that is safely collected and managed. That sounds like a low percentage, but when you appreciate that our starting position for liquid waste is only 6%, currently, and for solid waste is only 21%, it is quite ambitious. But secondly, to this point of what's in the drains, plastic. Plastic everywhere. And we've got a commitment that at least 40% of plastic should be recycled in Freetown by 2022. Again, hugely ambitious, but we need to be ambitious in order to save our city.
I am Joseph McCarthy. I am the executive director of the Sierra Leone Urban Research Center. I am also a lecturer at Njala University. The Sierra Leone Urban Research Center is a partnership between Njala University in Sierra Leone and the University College London in the UK. I think, to be very fair enough, Freetown was planned until the 1960s and to some extent until 1970s. You had particular areas that were designated for the residential purposes. You had particular areas like the Clinton axis, the Wellington axis, that were designated for industrial promotion. You also had specific areas like the Lumley Beach area, Aberdeen, which were actually designated for tourism, as the case may be. But over time, especially as a result of the war, a lot of things collapsed. So zoning was no longer recognized. Now we have a situation where people just look for any vacant land. And once they see it, it does not matter whether it is close to maybe a factory or whether it is close, whether it exists within a tourism promotion area, or it doesn't matter whether the piece of land is located within a residential area. Once they want to undertake any kind of activity, they are sure to undertake it. As I'm speaking to you, there is a welding shop that is already functioning and also causing a lot of disruption and causing a lot of noise to us. And this is supposed to be a residential area.
I'm Muslim Kwana, the spokesperson for Pick It Up, the waste management company of the city of Joburg.
How big an issue is waste management in the city? It's a huge city, Johannesburg. You've got a population of several million in the city alone, and then within the outskirts, something up to 14 million. So I'm just wondering how challenging a problem is waste in the city?
It is a huge, huge, huge problem. Currently, 97% of waste that we generate as a city goes into the landfill site. And our target is to significantly reduce the amount of waste that goes to landfill sites. I think added to that, it's we are slowly getting into recycling kind of a business or recycling. In terms of waste, we have four landfill sites that are reaching their end of their lifespan, and which is a huge challenge to us. Thus, we're trying to encourage and inculcate a culture of recycling in this country. Our biggest problem is not collecting waste. Our biggest problem is illegally dumped waste. And it costs the city around about 60 million per annum to clear illegal dumping sites, and which money can be better used for other services that the community need. And we're trying our level best in terms of creating awareness against illegal dumping and advising people that if they have excess waste, that waste can be disposed of in our landfill sites. Yeah. Sun and hope, sun and hope. Again, it's sun and hope, hope, hope.
Water insecurity is one of the biggest problems facing the urban poor. In recent years, African cities have experienced devastating water shortages as their populations continue to grow. So why are African cities running out of water? And what can be done about it? This is Caroline Rias, Senior Programme Manager with 100 Resilient Cities in London.
For instance, in Cape Town, you might have heard, the city was hit by a major drought in 2017. So unsurprisingly, the resilience strategy of Cape Town will focus particularly on building resilience in the water system and making Cape Town a water resilient city. The city is also working on other issues which are equally important, such as unemployment, mental health, crime and violence. And in other parts of Africa, in Accra, for instance, the resilience strategy is really focusing on how do we build infrastructure in a more integrated way? How do we plan for infrastructure that is really integrated and looks at the city in a holistic way?
Deep Sloot, 30 kilometres north of Johannesburg, is one of South Africa's most densely populated townships. Over the past 20 years, the population of Deep Sloot has mushroomed from 138,000 to over 400,000, while unofficial figures estimate the population to be closer to 500,000, putting an enormous strain on the existing urban infrastructure and services in the township. Most of Deep Sloot's inhabitants live in 3 metre by 3 metre shacks made from scrap metal, wood and plastic. So how difficult is life on a township in South Africa? This is Jermina Nokana, a local resident and community worker for Sonke Gender Justice in Deep Sloot.
It's very challenging because if you go to, especially to Extension 1, there's water running everywhere. People don't have a place where they don't have drains. They just pour water around the street, and the pipes that brings them water, they are somehow broken. So there's water everywhere, and they're living in shacks. You can imagine the kids inside those shacks. When they come out immediately, like 2-3 steps, they're already in that mud. Yeah. So there's no space for kids. There's no space for people to stay outside. So it's so bad.
And when I was driving through the township this morning, I saw bunches of children playing on top of rubbish dumps. And, you know, they were only about 4 or 5. That must cause serious health problems, does it?
It is. It is really, like, they don't have a space where they could play. They can't just go out to the park. We only have one recreational area. It's a park. It's only in Extension 8. And you can imagine small kids, they can't walk to the just to play. So they have to play around their houses. And this is where all this rubbish is. So they touch it every time. So for their health, it's so bad.
And you said there's lots of water leakages and so on. Does the entire township, does it have access to water? I know this morning there was no electricity in the township when I came in, that none of the lights were working, there was no electricity. So are there certain parts that have better facilities than others?
Yeah, in Extension 1, there's always more water. But where I'm staying in Extension 11. Yesterday we didn't have water. Even this morning there was no water. So they have those places that they always have water, but sometimes, it's only sometimes that the water is available every time. So sometimes you may go for 2-3 days without water.
Yeah. And does that get very depressing then? You must get very angry, do you?
It is depressing. Only those who drive with water tanks, they bring water. And it's never enough for us because we are many in this township. It's not enough. You may find that you only get 20 litres or 40 litres of water. You have to use the entire family. So it's so bad.
South Africa is currently experiencing a clean air crisis. A 2016 report by the World Bank estimates that roughly 200,000 South Africans die from air pollution-related causes every year, with the Johannesburg-Pretoria metro area suffering the highest loss of life, followed by other densely populated areas such as Cape Town and Durban. So, what are the links between energy, air pollution and human health? This is Nanala Sibisi, Senior Climate and Energy Campaigner from Greenpeace Africa.
Now, what other experiences that we have seen, and these are physical experiences that you can literally go have a chat to the community, have a chat even to your local doctors or general practitioners, even the clinics that are in the area, and they will tell you that from their own experience, they have experienced a higher rate of, especially children, as well as adults that have actually experienced, you know, respiratory diseases, that have had problems like lung problems and those kind of things. And in the majority of the cases, they can relate it to the, I mean, to the air that the people are breathing in the air, I mean, in the area. And not only can they only related to the air, but they can also relate it to the water pollution or water contamination that's happening in the area. So the dust, the pollution, everything has a direct impact on that community. And just to add a little bit of stats, there's like close to 2,000 deaths annually that are actually as a result. And this is a study done by my colleague. And it actually proves that the pollution that is being experienced in that area is creating a lot of immature deaths. And especially the biggest concern that we have as Greenpeace Africa is that it has a huge impact on children. And we know that the immune systems of children is still developing, and they are susceptible to actually get easily affected by other related diseases as well.
Is there a link between green space, mental well-being and sustainable communities? And how important is city planning and design in creating healthy green spaces? This is Professor Philip Harrison, Chair in Spatial Analysis and City Planning at Wits University in Johannesburg.
Johannesburg did very well for the white middle class. So if you go to the northern suburbs of Johannesburg, you see some beautiful parks. Some of those parks are reserved really for the exclusive few because they're golf courses, and we may have many golf courses in Johannesburg. But we also have a lot of public open space in the northern parts of Johannesburg. The challenge was the poorer areas. The challenge was the townships in Johannesburg, where there was very, very little open space or safe open space. There may be open spaces, but often the haunt of criminals, for example, so it wasn't safe for many segments of society. But I think that's something that Johannesburg has really tackled. And the post-apartheid city government of Johannesburg put a lot of its resources into providing green spaces in Soweto, for example. And so there's still a long way to go in terms of equalizing access to open space in the city, but there's been progress. You know, some people say that Johannesburg has the largest human-made forest in the world. It's not quite true. Actually, Beijing does. But Johannesburg used to be just a barren plateau. There were no trees here originally. But if you travel through the northern suburbs, it's beautifully wooded. It's greened. So it's not only public open space, it's private open space, beautiful gardens and trees. If you go to the southern parts of Johannesburg, it's still quite barren. So the challenge in Johannesburg really is to make sure that the poorest segments of the population have access to the same quality of environment that the middle class has.
My name is Mzwakhe Khumalo. We are in Diepsloot, which is a semi-urban area which is situated in the north of Joburg. I'm a research coordinator. I work for Sonke Gender Justice, and we've been working here in Diepsloot for the last 5.5 years. Look, I think by and large, South Africans, whether they are in townships or not, they would feel that they've been left out and neglected. But I feel that you see that a lot in black communities, you know, in communities that are poor and largely are obviously township communities. There's a lot that people can do for themselves. But it's very hard when you live in an informal settlement that is highly densely populated, where people have to share communal toilets. Sometimes the street lights is not working, and if that's the case, then women and girls can't access bathrooms when it's dark at night, right? So their dignity is then compromised, because then they have to use a bucket system. It's a lot that that has to be done to correct this? Some people may say, well, it's only been 25 years we've had this new dispensation of democracy, that we should be patient and allow time for our government to catch up. Unfortunately, we see a lot of things that have been left. For example, you would see there's a project to fix a road. Just as it's about to start, they do one street light or they do one third road and then they're gone. Then you ask yourself, what happened to the rest of the money? What happened to finishing the road? You would see a bridge being built and then from out of the blue, people have stopped building the bridge. People have to risk their lives to cross a bridge that is incomplete. You ever hardly get explanation as to what has happened. So there's a lot of things that are happening, but they never get completed. This community, I am sure now we're sitting at about 400,000 or 500,000 of people that live here, but we only have two clinics, which only operates between 9 and 5. So if you come after 11 a.m., chances are you would not get to see a doctor because there's a time where they really close taking people.
Africa's urban population is estimated to reach 60% by 2050, with large numbers of young adults moving to nearby cities for low-paid informal work. So how is climate change impacting on rural to urban migration patterns in sub-Saharan Africa? This is Caroline Rias, Senior Programme Manager with 100 Resilient Cities in London.
If you look at a city like Addis Ababa, for instance, for the longest time, natural growth, so the growth of the city's own population, was the main driver of urbanization and urban growth. What we're seeing in recent years is that due to pressure on rural areas related to climate change, for instance, lower productivity in rural areas, there's a huge wave of migrants coming from rural areas to cities. And because Ethiopia lacks really strong secondary cities, most of these migrants actually go directly to the capital. And this is adding a lot of pressure on the city to deliver basic urban services and infrastructure, but also jobs. This is a huge challenge right now. Africa has the largest youth population in the world. The youth account for 60% of the unemployed in the continent. So there's already a huge challenge to provide livelihood opportunities for residents and young people especially. And with the increase in migration, the pressure is doubled, essentially. And we're also seeing in places like Ethiopia, for instance, we're also seeing an increase in conflict-driven, internally displaced people, which is also leading to more pressure on cities' capacity to meet the day-to-day needs of its residents.
Freetown is home to several informal housing settlements where hundreds of thousands of men, women and children live in extreme poverty. Here, many slum dwellers live in filthy, overcrowded conditions with limited access to clean water, electricity and waste collection services, and where malnutrition, respiratory and diarrheal diseases are rife.
My name is Samuel Sheka Sisi and I'm the program coordinator for Kodusapa. And we are in a community called Dwazak. And this community is actually a hillside slum.
And I'm just looking all around there, and the shacks are right cut into the mountain. It's so steep, it's hard to believe that you could actually get shacks up that high, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. Actually, as you can see the topography of the community, you find out that the settlements are actually situated on steep land. And that has also posed a serious challenge for the dwellers themselves to even access their homes and so on. And even when it comes in terms of natural disaster like mudslide, they are always vulnerable to that. As I said, you know, the steepness of the land had actually posed very much serious challenge, especially in the rainy season. You know, roads are cut off, you know, bridges are broken. You know, children sometimes are cut off going to school and so on. So businesses, you know, also are halted. And it becomes so much difficult for people's survival and even their livelihood. So it's actually a difficult thing.
How big a problem is drainage here? Because I've been just looking at all the drainage holes and all the water lines. And there's so much plastic there, isn't there?
Yeah, sure, certainly. I think that's one of the key challenges we have faced, you know, in Freetown. The issue of waste management is very much challenging, especially when we are talking of plastic waste. You know, this plastic waste have no means for recycling. So people just use the content in the plastic and just drop, you know, and all this has been carried in the sea. You know, and we find out that this plastic waste and other waste has also posed, you know, the challenge of waste management, and at the same time resulting into blockage of water passage, waterways, and this always results to flooding when it rains.
According to the World Health Organization, more than 80% of the urban population lives exposed to polluted air, and it is low-income cities where this seems to be more impacted. In Johannesburg, the inadequate supply of public transport is pushing many people towards use of private modes of transport, adding to the city's existing air pollution crisis. So, how important are efficient and sustainable transport systems to urban resilience? This is Philip Harrison, Chair in Spatial Analysis and City Planning at Fitz University in Johannesburg.
So transportation is a major, major challenge for us. Because of our apartheid history, we have a very fragmented city. Black people were located to townships on the urban edge, far from places of work. In fact, our population of Indian origin is also in specific areas. The mixed race or colored population have their own townships. The areas previously historically white are very low density suburbs. And so transport is an enormous challenge. The middle class, which previously was almost entirely white, but now there is a significant black and Indian middle class as well. The middle class is overwhelmingly private car oriented, nearly 100%. And so this creates challenges of congestion and pollution and the sprawl of the city, car oriented sprawl. The working class in the city is largely dependent on what we call the minibus taxi. It's a form of public transport, but it's not government owned. It's government regulated. It's really private, and there are taxi associations. But the huge majority of Johannesburg's population moves around on a daily basis in minibus taxis. There are many challenges with minibus taxis. It's a poorly regulated sector. There are problems of safety, road safety and crime, for example. But it's also a very important sector for us because it's quite well suited to our very disjointed urban form, far more well suited than fixed line public transport. We do have commuter trains, but there's been a lack of investment over 30, 40 years. And we do have a bus system, and we have introduced bus rapid transit, but its ridership is still low. So you could say that Johannesburg is essentially dependent for the middle class on private car ownership and for the poorer population on the minibus taxi. Return, there is so much to be
done. And what about ideas on accessibility and sustainable urban development? And how important is safety and affordability on public transport? This is Caroline Rees, Senior Programme Manager with 100 Resilient Cities in London.
Safe and accessible transport is crucial. Transportation is not an end goal in itself. Transportation is a means to achieving something, which is accessibility. So accessibility to hospitals, to opportunities, to education centers, for instance. So in that sense, having affordable transportation is really key to ensuring that vulnerable population, especially the urban poor, are able to access a wide range of opportunities and access all the basic services that they need for their day-to-day life. In terms of gender and transportation, we know that there are cities that, for instance, that do not promote, for instance, walkability or that are designed in a way where, first of all, we think of moving cars before we think about moving people, and also we design the city from the perspective of the male rather than women. So it's quite important for women, especially as we look at women unemployment. We know that a lot of women suffer from unemployment in cities. In Addis Ababa city, women constitute 60% of the unemployed. So ensuring that women have safe access to transportation could also enable them to access more opportunities and other services. Return to Africa. So return your love to Africa.
Su amor. Vuelve, queda mucho por hacer. You're listening to The Right to a City on Documentary on News Talk.
And you're very welcome back to The Right to a City, Building Urban Resilience in Africa. I'm Susan Cahill, and with the support of IrishAid and the Simon Cumbers Media Fund, I've been visiting cities in Africa to see how they are scaling up for the Urban Resilience Challenge. The last national census of South Africa was carried out in 2011, and it suggests there has been a significant rise in the population over the last 10 years, with the population climbing to over 57.7 million people, an increase of 6 million. With more than half the population of South Africa living below the poverty line and over 50% of South Africans below the age of 35 unemployed, the country is in an economic crisis. So how important is employment to sustainable urban development? And is jobs creation as important as urban green infrastructure to the future of urban resilience? This is Philip Harrison, Chair in Spatial Analysis and City Planning at Fitz University in Johannesburg.
The most fundamental issue confronting our city is perhaps one of the most difficult to deal with as a city government. It's job creation. Because we have an official unemployment level which is close to 29%. And so economic security of the majority of our population is very fragile. And so the city government, to do whatever it can to support the livelihood of urban residents and job creation, is, I think, the number one priority. Now, of course, city government doesn't have direct control over the economy, and this is where the challenge is. But city government can at least make sure that the fundamentals are in place to create jobs in terms of infrastructure, in terms of support for small business, in terms of support for informal business, because the reality is that a large proportion of our population will remain for a very long time dependent on informal enterprise. And taking a unnecessarily regulative approach towards informal enterprise is not helpful in this context. City government has to make sure that the basics of health and safety are secured. But beyond that, I think it has to be quite facilitating in relation to people, desperate people who are trying to create their own employment, create their own jobs. And so job creation is number one.
So what steps should the city of Freetown take to ensure Freetown becomes a city of the future? And how important are issues such as citizen engagement and inclusion to city planning? This is Dr. Joseph McCarthy, the director of the Sierra Leone Urban Research Centre in Freetown.
I think the essence should be to focus more on inclusiveness, because as I speak, there are a lot of people, ideally, their conditions really suggest that they are not part of the city. If you look at people living in informal settlements, especially the slums, it will interest you to know that most of these places are really deprived places. Basically, I think one of the areas that the city government or the national government may need to give consideration to is how do we really ensure that we make the lives of people living in some of these deprived areas better. Because these are the very places where the challenge that is presented by climate change is highly concentrated. If you talk about flooding in Freetown, much of the flood water conveyed down the slopes down to the coastal areas where you have these informal settlements emerging. You also don't have proper drainage ways to really conduct some of this rainwater. But at the same time also, in terms of service provision, I don't think there is really fairness, especially in terms of people living in some of these places. So if we have to talk about sustainability, it's so much about thinking more clearly in terms of what kind of future we envision for ourselves. It's so much about thinking through in terms of how we can also accommodate the urbanization challenge that we have, especially with regards to land, access to housing, but at the same time, how do we also ensure that we provide the services in ways that can really allow a number of families not to go without. Because this is the dry season, and as I speak to you, you can see queues, especially during the daytime, of people fetching water in a very desperate condition all over the place. And this is not supposed to be, because we have gained independence for over 50 years now. Some of these things are issues that should have been part of our past, but still we continue to struggle with them.
So what is the hope for townships like Dieppe Sluis in South Africa? And how important is affordable housing for resilient neighbourhood cities and communities? This is Mokwaze Kumalo, a research coordinator with Sonke Gender Justice in Dieppe Sluis.
Look, I don't know where Dieppe Sluis will be, because you would see as you drive around in the north of Joburg, just across, not far from here, just about 5 kilometers from here, there's a suburb here called Denfeng. It's one of the most richest suburbs you'll ever find in the north of Joburg. Next to it, there's a city called Steyn City. I think the cheapest house there, it's about 15 million rands, right? And just next to Steyn City, it's Dieppe Sluis. And I am sure right now that there is something that's happening somewhere in Riversend. So there's an estate that's been built there. It's going to cost fortunes for people that live there. So what you see is that you're seeing these very wealthy communities, estates mushrooming around Dieppe Sluis, and nothing is happening to Dieppe Sluis. And it looks like it's going to continue in that way. And people in Dieppe Sluis will just be surrounded by wealthy families, wealthy people, wealthy South Africans, and they will still be stuck here.
So what is the future for the city of Freetown, and will it transition to a sustainable urban future? This is Mary Vaughan Aki-Sawyer from the city of Freetown.
My hope is that we have a city which is a destination city. What does that mean? It means it's a place that people want to live, work and play. We are seeking to attract tourists. You've been here for a few days. I'm sure you agree with me. This is a beautiful place. It just needs some tidying up. And with the 20-year vision, like I think any aspiration that any other mayor would have, it's to transform the lives of the residents of the city. Resilience, as I say, it's the buzzword. But at the end of the day, you want to ensure that the sustainability, that people have jobs, and that people are living in a safe and clean environment, and that this beautiful natural environment, landscape that we've been blessed with, is protected and preserved for the next generation.
And that was Mary Vaughan Aki-Sawyer, the mayor of Freetown. Well, that's it from Johannesburg and from Freetown for this evening. Two cities in Africa that face huge opportunities and challenges with rapid urbanisation. Okay, all that's left for me to do now is to say thank you for listening, and a big shout out to Arashade and the Simon Cummers Media Fund for supporting the Right to a City project. I'm Susan Cahill. Thanks for listening.
The Right to a City, Building Urban Resilience in Africa was produced and presented by Susan Cahill and supported by the Simon Cumbers Media Challenge Fund.